Welcome to the Political Rewind. I'm Muthoni Muturi. Coming up today, Southern Senate ladies woman their battle stations and the fight for the bluegrass vote.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris. This November, Democrats are hoping to add to their majority in Congress. We're going to hear now about two races where Republicans are in danger of losing their seats. First, to North Carolina, where Elizabeth Dole is in her first bid for re-election. She holds the seat that belonged to Republican Jesse Helms for 30 years. Some polls show Dole trailing her challenger, State Senator Kay Hagan. NPR's Linda Wertheimer went to the state to find out why Dole is in trouble.
The Democrats in North Carolina and in the U.S. Senate had a tough time finding a candidate to oppose Liddy Dole. A series of state office holders didn't like their chances, including Kay Hagan.
I have a great family life, and I had a very powerful position in the state legislature, and I did turn it down. However, that very next day, I knew it was the wrong decision.
Timing is everything. Hagan now has a better-than-even chance of being elected to the Senate. She portrays Dole as being out of touch with North Carolina, closer to Kansas, the home of her husband, former senator and presidential candidate Robert Dole.
So here she's now representing North Carolina in the U.S. Senate. You know, and she really hasn't lived here in over 40 years. So I always talk about the fact that I live in North Carolina and my husband can vote for me.
Pollster Tom Jensen of Public Policy Polling in Raleigh says that Hagan's campaign is working because she has a disciplined message.
The two things that the Hagan campaign's really focused on are tying Elizabeth Dole to George W. Bush and his economic policies. And then the other thing is a very personal thing. They've argued that Elizabeth Dole has not been visible enough, that she hasn't been around, that she hasn't been a ubiquitous presence in the state.
The Democratic Senate Campaign Committee has poured money into the state, paying for a series of unusually good-natured attack ads featuring two older gents sitting in rocking chairs in front of a country store.
I'm telling you, Liddy Dole is 93.
93?
Yep. She ranks 93rd in effectiveness.
After 40 years in Washington?
After 40 years in Washington, Dole is 93rd in effectiveness, right near the bottom.
I've read she's 92.
Did I just tell you she's 93?
No, 92% of the time she votes with Bush.
What's happened to the Liddy Dole I knew?
She's just not a go-getter like you and me.
And here's Hagan herself on message in Rocky Mount at a Nash County Democratic dinner.
The seat I'm running for is the seat that Senator Jesse Helms held. And you know, we all referred to him as Senator No. Well, Liddy Dole is Senator Nowhere in North Carolina.
The Winston-Salem Journal used Senate travel records to demonstrate that Mrs. Dole has spent very little time in North Carolina, under 2 weeks in one of the years she served as senator. But she's picked up the pace. Vice presidential candidate Sarah Palin appeared last week in Greenville, and Dole was there too.
Wow, reminded me of my old days when I used to be a model coming down this runway today.
In her speech, Dole praised other Republicans running this year, including Senator John McCain, and she talked about her own career in the Senate.
You know, I'm very, very proud to serve on the Armed Services Committee. I chose my committees because I thought, let's take the ones that are best for North Carolina. But I'll tell you, our young men and women in the military are the finest, the most skilled, and I am so proud of them.
Dole also took some time to bash her opponent for the negative ads produced by the National Democratic Senate Campaign Committee and its chairman, Senator Chuck Schumer of New York.
He is sending in almost $10 million against me in negative, ugly, mean-spirited, untruthful ads.
The Dole campaign is also using negative ads, attacking Hagan for oil and gas investments, state budget debates, taxes, and for using negative ads.
They call her Fibber K. Hagan. Fib after fib, she tries to turn us against Elizabeth Dole. But we know Elizabeth has been consistently voted one of the 10 most admired women in the world. Her clout works wonders for North Carolina. So bark away, Fibber K. That dog don't hunt.
While the rocking chair ads got the attention of most North Carolina voters, according to pollster Tom Jensen, the Dole ads have not worked as well.
The Republican bombardment began in September, but what's interesting is every single time a new set of ads starts running, Hagan's lead just keeps on increasing. And I think it's because they're trying to hit Hagan with too many things at once. There's not enough cohesion in the message. I don't think any of it's really connecting with the voters.
Hagan has a lead in the Senate race right now and may benefit if there is a large turnout of black voters for Senator Barack Obama. But Senator Dole is the incumbent. Mrs. Dole decided this week to put some of her personal money in her campaign. She feels, she says, that she needs to put some skin in the game. Linda Wertheimer, NPR News.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Jackie Lydon. It's a strong year for Democrats in the U.S. Senate races, and incumbent Mary Landrieu of Louisiana has long been considered the weak link. Many of her supporters were scattered to other states by hurricanes, and her opponent, Democrat-turned-Republican John Kennedy, was recruited by none other than Karl Rove. Now, with 2 weeks to go before the election, Landrieu has jumped to a clear lead. NPR's Audie Cornish reports from New Orleans.
Senator Mary Landrieu says she knew this year Republicans were counting on a shot at her Senate seat.
Well, I think they just miscalculated. I mean, they kept, just because you say someone's vulnerable doesn't mean they're vulnerable.
That's a senator at a coffee shop just a mile or two away from the scene of one of the levee breaks from 2005. Her opponent campaigned just the day before at a diner in suburban New Orleans.
I want to thank everybody for coming out.
State Treasurer John Kennedy was up until last year a socially conservative Democrat. He switched to the Republican Party to challenge Landrieu.
Her platform is, I know how to work the system in Washington. And I think she's missed the issue in this race. The issue in this race is whether the system in Washington is working for us. And it's, I don't know about other states, but it's not working for Louisiana. And we need to change it.
Kennedy says his message is one of conservative change and reform. And his base consists of Republicans like Margaret Baird of Metairie, who doesn't trust the Democratic incumbent.
Hypocrite. I think she's too liberal for Louisiana.
Or voters like Carol Graves of Harahan, who's most concerned about the balance of power on the Senate floor in Washington.
Because the Senate is going to be mainly Democrat. They're expecting it, that they're going to be able to pass anything that they want. And I think that we need a Republican in there.
But so far, Kennedy has failed to win over voters like Lindsey McCann. She saw both the candidates at a recent Senate debate at the University of New Orleans and left backing Landrieu.
She's always fought for us, whether, you know, getting us money when FEMA didn't come through, when the president didn't come through. She's a strong supporter of being a bipartisan candidate, and I think that has a great influence, you know, bring Republicans to her side.
Unlike some other Louisiana politicians, Landrieu's reputation has only improved since Hurricanes Katrina and Rita more than 3.5 years ago, and perhaps even more so this summer when two more hurricanes hit the state, says Professor Pearson Cross of the University of Lafayette.
In fact, Gustav and Ike provided Mary Landrieu with an opportunity to look and act as if she was getting something done for Louisiana and to bring aid down here, and in fact just showcased the senator's effectiveness.
When those storms hit in August, Kennedy paused his campaign and lost ground in the polls, and Landrieu was able to paint herself as a power broker with bipartisan credentials on issues like offshore drilling. Landrieu says change may be the mantra in other states, but that's just not the case when it comes to her role as a senior senator from Louisiana.
Our people need the federal government right now. I mean, our people need the federal government to work and work effectively, and they know that it failed them. They want it fixed. But they don't think that they can do this on their own. They recognize that they need state and local government to continue to help them. And so they want somebody that's been around the block, that understands the system, that's proven she can deliver.
At least some Republicans have gotten that message. The National Party's waffled on pulling its advertising out of the state, a concession that their lone target may no longer be a target. And several state Republicans, including the sheriff of Kennedy's own county, have endorsed Landrieu. Audie Cornish, NPR News, New Orleans.
It's the Political Rewind. I'm Muthoni Muturi. Finally today, the road to the White House runs through Appalachia.
Now to a state that wasn't supposed to be a battleground. President Bush carried West Virginia twice, and for nearly a century, no Democrat has won the White House without winning West Virginia. In the primary last spring, Hillary Clinton easily defeated Barack Obama, but recent polls suggest Obama is running neck and neck with John McCain. We sent NPR's David Green to West Virginia for a visit.
Back in May, Hillary Clinton landed in the coal town of Logan, West Virginia. The sounds were of people coming up to Clinton, begging her not to give up.
Hillary, don't give up. Don't give up at all.
When I returned to Logan this week, there were no presidential candidates. The sounds in the autumn-colored mountains are from bluegrass musicians gathering in a park. And downtown, a marching band is helping break ground for a new state building. This is where I meet Paul Hardesty.
What you're looking at here basically is small town America in central Appalachia.
This small town welcomed John F. Kennedy in 1960, and people are still talking about that.
This is a very strong Democrat part of the state. Our ratio here is 10 to 1 Democrat to Republican on registered voters. And people were thrilled to see Hillary when she came.
Paul saw Clinton. He's a Democrat and has worked for two governors. He did vote for President Bush in 2000 because he didn't think Al Gore liked the coal industry. But this year, he's going for Obama. Paul says Obama talks about clean coal and has a strong economic message.
People are going to vote their pocketbook. The economy's in the tank. People here are hurting.
You're at Plaza Lane's bowling alley in the city of Logan. And there's another bowling alley, but we won't mention it.
That's Judy Baisden. She's working the register. And from here, she says, she's watched this mining community lose jobs and people. It is a proud place.
But Logan needs help bad. Whoever's going to help Logan, that's who I'm going to be for.
She's always been for Democrats.
My grandfather raised us. You be a Democrat and you never change. So I don't know if he'd turn over in his grave if I changed to Republican or not.
Judy says much of her family is sticking with the Democrat, Barack Obama. As for Judy, she's wavering, in part because of what she's heard from friends. Clearly, the rumors and chatter about Obama haven't gone away.
Oh, I've got one friend that sends me so many emails about him. You know, and it's all this stuff. Things he did when he was little. His church, the minister, the things that went on. That put a question in my mind.
What question did that raise for you?
Whether he is really an American or not.
Across the street at Chopper's Barbershop, we interrupt the conversation.
We were just talking about the election.
Why are you getting your hair cut?
Yeah.
Jack Baisden's getting a $10 cut. He's no relation to Judy Baisden over at the bowling alley. Jack owns a gardening center in town. He's a Democrat, can't decide who to vote for.
Neither one of them just reaches out and grabs me. Obama seems like a Harvard lawyer that's kind of speaking above my head, and McCain don't really tell you a whole lot of anything other than round and round the bush he goes, you know.
Whatever he decides, Jack doesn't believe the polls, showing Obama close in West Virginia. He says while race isn't a factor for him, it may be for older people.
There's people out here that they'll say they're not racist, but they're not going to vote for a black person.
Around town, we meet people like Tommy Lee. He's a 56-year-old Air Force veteran who's voted Democratic all his life. Now he's backing McCain. He says it wasn't a hard switch.
Not at all. Obama don't have no military experience whatsoever. None. McCain does.
Tommy also says he wouldn't be ready for a black president.
I wouldn't.
Why not?
Because I don't think blacks have enough to run the country.
Tommy says bluntly that he's prejudiced. He also says if a black candidate had more experience than Obama, it could help him overcome his prejudice. There's a different side to the story in Steve Nagy, a retired miner. He's outside a gas station eating Cheetos.
And who are you voting for again?
Huh?
Who are you voting for?
Bomber. Oh, yeah.
Obama, he says, stands for poor people. Never mind any talk of racism here.
I'm 84 years old. I had a lot of good colored people. They never did bother me. I never bothered them. They're good to me and I'm good to them. That's all I can say.
With that, Steve's on his way to meet a friend outside the bowling alley. David Green, NPR News, Logan, West Virginia.
And you can see photos of Logan and the people who live there at our website, npr.org.
Thanks for listening to The Political Rewind, and we're blogging politics at Vox Politics. Find us at npr.org.